So I got Rocktober issue 46 in the mail today, the one that you, the knife, and Matt Anthony was reviewed in. I didn't realize the Strongest Proof was reviewed in it too. And it says the Longest Proof. That was the review.
For 10 years, Cincinnati's Frey Tree Records has been a driving force in the world of underground music. A true music lover and fan of the bands that he works with, Jerry Durr, founder of Frey Tree, helps bands around the world get their music out to the masses, often with money out of his own pocket. I sat down with Jerry at his home in Norwood for a candid interview about Frey Tree Records, its history, its future, and the Cincinnati music scene. Well, Jerry, take me back, I guess, 10 years. When you're sitting there somewhere and you just think to yourself, what the hell, I think I'll start my own record label. How's that work?
It wasn't any like big epiphany or anything like that. I mean, it was just, I'd been in bands for a long time. Those bands had always put out their own 7 inches and CDs. So I'd already gotten a feel for how it could be done, the process by which you release a record. And I think I just kind of got to a point in my life where I felt pretty stable with my job. I had a steady income. I was out of school. I was kind of in and out of bands at the time. I wasn't playing as much as I had previously in other bands. And so I think I was just looking for some sort of artistic, productive outlet. And there were a lot of bands here in town that I was being turned on to. And I just thought I personally would like to have their record. So just put it out.
When you started this, did you model yourself after any labels that you knew of that you thought, these guys are doing it right, and I kind of want to do it in that same way?
I mean, I'm certainly influenced, for sure, by labels like SST and Touch and Go, Discord, obviously. Not knowing their internal business structure or business model, I don't know that I could say I've, you know, modeled myself, you know, to an exact extent by any stretch of the imagination. But certainly just on a, I guess, a philosophical level, I certainly tried to model myself after those labels.
And you mentioned the actual physical process of putting out a record. Once the recording is done, what happens between then and the actual pressing of the CD or the vinyl or whatever the final product is?
You know, myself and the band sit down and we decide, okay, what format do we want to release this on? Do we want to do digital only? Do we want to do CD? Do we want to do vinyl? Do we want to do all of the above? And once that's decided upon, then you start to just break everything down by way of costs and by way of, you know, whatever artwork the band is interested in using for their album art and trying to figure out the most cost-effective way of doing that. I feel pretty good in that most releases are pretty, we keep our costs as low as possible. Other releases we get a little ahead of ourselves and, you know, maybe, you know, whether it's the screen-printed Matt Anthony vinyl or screen-printed Aperiodic LP covers, the gatefold Shanks LP, you know, something like that. Occasionally you find yourself going beyond your means, but, you know, in the interest of just, you know, having fun and wanting to make something that looks cool, you know, you'd hate to think 10 years down the road, oh, I wish we had done this or I wish we had done that. But typically, yeah, you're just trying to find the most cost-effective way to make something neat.
What was the first official release by Frey Tree Records?
That was the Caterpillar Tracks full-length in 2004. I did not know those guys prior to them coming together and forming Caterpillar Tracks. It was a band that both Rick and Mike from Ampline turned me on to, and I went and saw them a couple of times, and Mike invited me down to a studio when he was recording the record with those guys. And yeah, I thought it was great. And again, it was just one of those things like, man, I would really like to have this. So I just decided that would be a good one to start out with.
past 10 years, taking it from, I guess, primarily Cincinnati bands, but you now have relationships with bands as far away as Croatia, and you mentioned the Shanks, who are from Toronto. How do you build those kind of international relationships?
I mean, that's all just from touring. The United Sons of Toil, who's a Fratree band out of Madison, Wisconsin, they toured Europe and hooked up with Joe Four. The Shanks are somebody that Matt Anthony hooked up with on tour in Canada. Any relationship that I build with anybody outside of Cincinnati comes from touring, whether it's Knife the Symphony, you know, going to another city, or it's another band from out of town coming through Cincinnati and seeing them, you know, here locally. The only one that I ever actually pursued, not having seen them play live, never having seen them play in Cincinnati, is LKN and Palo Verde, who I essentially just cold called. Jeff Albers from Knife the Symphony turned me on to LKN's music on, you know, MySpace. That was, you know, sign of the times. And I just immediately fell in love with it. I'm a sucker for percussion and piano playing, and she had both, and it was done just, I mean, it's just mind-blowing. One of the best drummers I've ever heard.
Too long ago, you did a recording with a band called Food, featuring Ed Crawford from Firehose, one of my favorite bands. How did you hook up with Ed?
It was just dumb luck. Again, Knife the Symphony was on tour, and on this particular tour, it was our last night. We were stopping through Pittsburgh for the first time, and we played a club called Gooskies. It's a shotgun-style bar, and in the back of the bar, they've just got this concrete room, and we kind of show up and we take a look around like, oh man, we're gonna be way too loud for this room. And we didn't know anything about the bands that we were playing with. We didn't, you know, we were kind of clueless. It had been a long trip, and I think we were just tired and, you know, just grumpy anyway, and just, oh god, we just wanted to play and just be done and be on our way, which, you know, you hate to end a tour like that, but that's just how we felt. I don't know. We were maybe like second or third on a two or three band bill. And, you know, the first band plays and, you know, there's some people that are watching, you know, we're looking at each other the whole time. Like, they're going to hate us. They're going to hate us. We're going to be too loud. You know, this is not going to go well. And sure enough, we get up and start playing, and we clear the room. So in the back of this room, there's in the shadows, there's this figure, right? There's somebody that has stuck around for the whole thing. And is clapping and is clearly paying attention to what we're doing. And you know, it's one of these things like, okay, I guess there is somebody back there. But so we get finished playing, and we're just throwing stuff on our cases, trying to get off stage and not really looking at each other, just kind of barking at each other and whatever. So this guy from the back of the room comes up, and we're not really paying much attention to him. We're just kind of doing our thing on stage. And here's this guy at the foot of the stage, and, you know, just out of the corner of my eye, he starts talking, hey man, I really, really liked your set and blah, 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 blah. It sounded great. And Jeff's at the foot of the stage, sort of bent over, you know, putting chords in his case and, you know, stuff like that. And so he's the one primarily talking to him. And I just kind of hear the conversation that's going on. And Jeff's like, oh, you know, thanks a lot. Not really giving him the time of day, which is so not like us. We pride ourselves on being respectful and talking to people. But on this night, it just, I don't know what it was. So anyway, you know, Jeff says something to the effect of, oh, so are you from Pittsburgh? He's like, yeah, well, you know, I've been here for a few years, not originally. He's like, I'm Ed from Ohio. And I hear this, I'm like, what? And I look over, and I look over at Jeff, and Jeff looks over at me, and then we look back at this guy, and Jeff's like, the Ed from Ohio? I was like, yeah, man, I would not lie about that. The Ed from Ohio. And so we kind of take a second look, and sure enough, like, it's him, just wow. Older than the last time we had ever seen him, you know, like... Yeah.
favorite release from Freytree?
Favorite release is usually whatever the newest one is at the time. One of my favorite bands, and I've always been kind of vocal about this, one of my favorite bands on Freytree is Swear Jar. Now, I've had multiple conversations with those guys. Like, I wish they were doing a little bit more in terms of touring or in terms of, you know, getting their name out there. But I love everything that they do. They're everything that I like about underground music. They don't kowtow to anybody. They're not doing anything trendy. Their compositions are really just all over the place. And you have to, it's the kind of music that you have to really be in tune to sort of find the hook. And once you do find the hook, I mean, the payoff is just gigantic. I mean, they're probably my favorite band, but, you know, you hate to play favorites, obviously, because ultimately I wouldn't put out anything that I didn't like. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking over the shelf and I'm just like, well, I mean, that one's great, but it's not necessarily better than that one, which isn't better than that one. You know, I mean, they're all... But yeah, Swear Jar always sticks out in my mind as the guys. Like, that, like everything they do is kind of like what I had in mind when I started the label. Narcissist artist, I'm gonna feed you our
As of August of 2014, Freytree is now celebrating 10 years of bringing music to the world. And then you're celebrating with a film?
It's been a work in progress for the last year already. I'm thinking we probably got another 6 months at least, because a lot of the stuff that we want to include in the film, that footage is going to be taken at the anniversary show in October. Really, it just started out very simply. It started out as I just wanted to document all of these bands on film. Because while you can certainly go online on YouTube and find a lot of, you know, iPhone video or, you know, just a quick video that somebody's made at a show that, you know, maybe there's three quarters of a song or something like that. Sound quality is usually crap. Occasionally, somebody will make an actual, like, high production style music video, and that's great, but that's not what I want. Like, I wanted to capture these bands in good quality, in a live setting, just how they are, you know, no bells and whistles, just this is the experience of seeing these bands live, because it really is a different experience than what you're hearing on record. And so I've always been a fan of bands that sound different live than they do on the recording. The recording is, you know, the recording process is a totally different medium. I mean, you can get your point across using a lot of different tricks, a lot of different methods, but live, it is what it is. And you're only as good as you are live. So I just thought that would be exciting to just have a document of all these bands. And so it's kind of snowballed from there, and it's turned into this actual documentary style movie.
What's your take on the Cincinnati music scene in general when you think of things like Midpoint Music Festival and Bunbury, and then you have, you know, small clubs like Rake's End? Is the Cincinnati music scene doing well?
I mean, it's a hard question to answer. I don't think there's any... I don't think you can just say yes or no to that question. I mean, I've been playing music in this town since 93, and this is... In terms of quality, in terms of sheer volume of music, just the amount of music, the amount of bands, the number of venues that there are to play, all of the releases that people have now under their belts, the amount of bands from Cincinnati that are actually touring Europe as well as the United States, the number of festivals, the number of good, big, quality festivals, I certainly would say for sure that it's thriving and that it's probably at its highest quality level that it's ever been. Now, whether or not all of the varying things are things that I personally participate in or get excited about, no, but that's not to say that I don't think they're a good thing. I think there are things that Fratree's music is suitable for, and I think there are things that it's not suitable for. And that's fine, you know, and that's totally fine. I don't feel the need to participate in everything. I don't necessarily expect to be invited to everything by any stretch of the imagination.
You won't find Gazer at Bunbury.
Probably not. But that would still be amazing. Because who knows? Maybe just because they're going to Bunbury, maybe they're into lots of different styles of music. Who knows?
What's next for Fratree?
I have no idea. I have a hard time seeing much beyond a calendar year, let alone 5 or 10 years down the road. When I first started the label, 5 years seemed like, oh my God, that's going to be... I can't imagine this going on for 5 years. That just seemed like such a long period of time, especially given the fact that when I started the label, I hadn't even turned 30 yet. I was 28 at the time. And so even the age of 30 seemed so far away. And it sounds like a cliche, but you know, here you are 10 years later and you say, well, where did the time go? I mean, it really has gone by fast. But these last few years have certainly been the most productive for the label. You know, the catalog is at nearly 50 releases now. Whereas for the first few years, I mean, I was only doing one or two records a year, and then it just, I don't know, about 5 years into it, you know, the catalog damn near doubled within, you know, the second 5 years. So I don't know. It really is difficult to see past a calendar year because I'm constantly working on things that are just a few weeks out or a month out or 2 months out or 3 months out, not much more than 3 months out at a time. And so in August, I'm not thinking much past November. In November, I'm not thinking much past January. In January, I'm not thinking much past March. I feel like I'm certainly at a crossroads 10 years into it. It's not financially lucrative at all. And so I have to take a step back and decide, well, do I want to keep putting this amount of money into it every year? I suppose as long as I'm gainfully employed and I can still pay all my bills, then certainly, yes, it's going to be something that I'm going to continue to do just as a fan of music and a fan of these bands and just that desire to just get up in the morning and be productive and have something to work on and have a creative outlet. I can certainly see it lasting for, you know, an infinite number of years, but it really is hard to say realistically because I can't think that far ahead.
Well, Jerry, you've been spending at least part of the last 10 years bringing great music to Cincinnati and to the rest of the world. So I want to thank you for doing that and thank you for taking some time to speak with me today.
Thank you, Jim. It's fun. It is bloody
for WVXU's local exposure, I'm Jim Nolan.